This episode is supported by The Abstract and Maori Audio. All right, let's drop the needle.
I feel like there's something about voice and how people should know that they have a voice and they should feel like they have the authority to use it.
Life beyond work feel disconnected? Press pause and listen in. Talk Human to Me, a show for entrepreneurs with nothing about entrepreneurship. Founders take a break and reconnect with personal stuff that matters to them.
I'm today's host, Jeff Hsiao. In this episode, I talk with Nichelle Freeman, the CEO of Witty Gritty and publisher of Flying Kite Media, part of the Issue Media Group. But what she does only makes up part of who she is. Instead, we talked about stuff like compassion, anxiety attacks, and how her mom stuck by her dad through his darkest phase of alcoholism.
So grab a seat and kick back as our guest reconnects with parts of their identity that got left in the dark and rediscovers the foundation of who they are. We start each episode the same way. What about humans strikes you the most?
So I think more recently, because of current political climate, I've been thinking a little more negatively when I think about humans. Humans are complex, but in some weird way, there's that sense of ego. We think that we're like the shit and that we're undefeatable, when really we're just a little teeny tiny blip on some type of infinite timeline that we can't even understand. I feel like on days when I'm feeling more optimistic, I think humans are fascinating and are capable of so much. But I also fear the sort of dark side of humans and how we are just innately a species that is going to destroy itself. My husband has more recently said to me that humans, this sounds so like sad and doomy, but that humans are just this like virus on Earth. Just because sometimes you see shitty things. And like I said, I think this is more because of political climate and maybe just too much access to news from all over the world. Maybe when I was younger, I was more naive. And I do feel like we're a species that has to really put forth an extra effort to be kind and compassionate, and that doesn't always happen so naturally. I'm starting to just allow myself to think that a little more so that I'm not hanging out on the surface. I do consider myself an optimistic person, but I think maybe as I'm getting older, I'm realizing that I should kind of peel back the layers a little bit.
You were bringing up two themes. One was just the complete overinflated ego that humans kind of enter into this world having. We're taught from a young age, at least in Western schools, that we are the most intelligent beings.
Right.
That we have a responsibility to lead and save all species of like whatever life, right? And there's also the theme of how can we start to also let go and realize we're not actually that significant in the grand scheme of things. Where does that root in you? Why has that become something that's especially present?
I think just in generally, an ethos of mine is that, you know, having a peaceful world doesn't feel that complex of a concept to me. So I get frustrated by that. And then I think about, why wouldn't the world be this way? The history of America started with people killing each other, you know, and guns and fear and just violence that spurred out of the unknown. That's kind of like who we are as humans, right? Like no matter what, you could have a kid that's raised in a place that never gets exposed to anything but kindness and sharing, and just say that this kid never ever got exposed to anything violent at all. That kid will still have it in them to want to take, not share. And I think that humans just have to like do everything they can to be taught and practice a discipline to not do that. So even the most generous person, I feel like unconsciously still has these human traits that we have to fight against. And eventually with practice, it sort of dilutes, or, you know, you can kind of like strike your own balance. But it just makes, that's the type of stuff I've been thinking about, is just like human nature and behavior. Just thinking about how like we as a race are so reactionary and not preventative. And even though in our heads, it sounds like a good idea, like Let's prevent that. Even if it's just for me as an individual to treat myself better and work out and be preventative about what my future might hold. The same thing goes with a number of other things. And I think a lot of that had got me thinking more recently because of, you know, the woke AF movement. All this stuff was already in existence and happening. Now it's just all blown up to the surface and shit. Now we have to all do something because it's in our face. But it was there all along. So why weren't we doing something about it before that?
What do you feel was instilled in you as a kid?
I mean, it's interesting. You know, we didn't grow up with a lot of money, and I was raised Catholic, and we were a part of the quote unquote richer, more affluent parish. And my family was like the poor family. When I think about that, I didn't really feel like it affected me that much at all. There was always food on the table and we had basic cable. And I was like, that's cool. My life is good. It's fine. My dad's like blue collar type of working guy. But more recently, I was talking to a friend like in the last month or two and had that aha moment. Like this loving sort of environment that I was raised in was what protected me from any type of real concern around the fact that maybe like on paper, it seemed like we had a more tragic life or something like that. My dad was a really bad alcoholic, and that didn't help our like financial situation at all. And we were, you know, single income home. My mom raised us, stayed at home for a while, and then eventually like started working. My mom moved here from Japan when she was in her early 20s, when my dad was stationed in the Navy in Japan, and they had met there. And my dad and my mom got engaged 2 months after they met.
Wow.
And my grandfather was, my Japanese grandfather was not into that at all. You know, he was not into like this American guy who's going to take his daughter to the States, like as a souvenir. And my, you know, parents moved here. My mom didn't speak English when she moved here. My dad spoke fluent Japanese, and that's how they communicate it. My dad's completely sober. He's been sober for a long time, but him being alcoholic was a huge part of my childhood. It was really bad. Some of my childhood that I'm trying to like unpack now, because I have a really, really close relationship with my parents, but I would just sort of be like, that's part of my childhood. That's what happened. My dad's alive. My parents are together. I have a loving family still. I still feel like despite those things, I still stand by feeling like I was really raised in a loving home, despite some of those, you know, complexities, I guess you can call them.
I'd like our listeners to know more about one of our sponsors, The Abstract. Let me give the co-founder, Lala Openi, a quick call. That way we can hear from the human behind the company.
Hello?
Hey, Lala, this is Jeff. So I wanted our listeners to get to know you and your company a bit better. What value does your company have that personally means a lot to you?
With The Abstract, our practice is essentially healing and dealing, sharing and caring. This personally means a lot to me because it demystifies mental health work and reminds me that we're all living through the same human condition together. Like, none of us lives in a bubble. And in my own journey to healing, it's been a give and take, ebb and flow, rest and recovery, coping and resiliency. It's definitely hard work, but I've learned that sometimes the most profound work I can do is to keep things simple. Take some deep breaths, remember that I love and accept myself and my emotions as they are. There's enough organized chaos and disconnect that we deal with on a day-to-day. Healing and dealing, sharing and caring is not only important, it's revolutionary.
Reflecting back on, you know, understanding threads of that tapestry, there was alcoholism. Now, there's also the story of recovery and reconciliation and just trying to understand and almost have compassion and empathy and forgiveness in that.
Sure. Right?
What does that tapestry look like right now? Are there things that you're trying to continue to add to that that are really important to you today?
Yeah. I was thinking about it this morning. I was realizing that a lot of what I'm trying to figure out, and it's really difficult for me, is to figure out who I am outside of work, because it's been such a innate part of my adulthood that I'm really trying to figure out what that tapestry looks like. And I think that for a little bit, I thought the answer was I really have to separate work in a way, even though it's such a part of me. So like, if we're thinking about the tapestry metaphor, I'm thinking, how do I just integrate and weave all of this together, but still feel like I'm giving myself the care that I need? Because I feel like maybe this tapestry of mine is just really informed by the actions of everybody around me, because I think being around other people gives me lots of energy. So I was rolling with that for a long time. And now I'm trying to really unpack what is some of this shit in me that I'm not, that maybe I just never really faced. And not that I want to try to have some big self-discovery and make up some reasons of deep-rooted shit that I never really surfaced, but I want to give myself the time to figure that out and to connect some of the dots in my childhood and some of the things that really informed me. Because like I said earlier, I'm a very optimistic person, and I think that might have been to a fault at some points, where it actually was a sort of a defense mechanism to just brush away anything that felt like it would have caused me some kind of conflict or confrontation that I didn't want to have with myself. So to tie it back to some of what I just shared about growing up is that I think about loyalty a lot. And I think that my definition of loyalty is really informed by my parents' relationship and how, like, there had been so many circumstances where it would have been completely okay and probably encouraged for my mom to leave my dad. And that thought maybe entered my mom's mind more times than I'll ever know, but she stuck by him, and that's the reason he's alive, and that's the reason that we have our family the way that it is. It's really her in my mind. And just seeing how loyal she was to and is to my dad, despite the darkest places, you know, is just so incredible that I just have this different sense of loyalty about relationships. And it's funny because, again, it's almost maybe to a fault, because now I'm starting to unpack, okay, so loyalty is something that I really value, but maybe I shouldn't be spreading all that quote unquote loyalty and that loyal energy to just anybody. So now I'm trying to look at, okay, well, what are the healthy relationships and friendships in my life? What are the ones that maybe like I'm putting way too much effort and hanging on to this concept of loyalty to the point where it's affecting me and taking away energy that I could be giving to people who maybe need it more. You know, I think that's like an ongoing journey, but I'm really trying to unpack it, and probably in the first real way in my life.
What sparked that? Was it just a conversation with your friend when you had that realization that, holy crap, I haven't really taken the time to reflect and unpack myself and take care of myself for a long time, and I need to pause and do that? Was there something that triggered that?
I feel like when big life things happen that aren't related to work, and that could be death, could be joyous things like a wedding or somebody having a baby, or, you know, big life kind of milestones. Those are big and in your face kind of reminders for me of how important it is to really just be more present and wanting to take that as an ongoing practice in my life. I was like having these swings of deep anxiety that were like, I was giving chest pains, and the sort of anxiety and stress I was experiencing wasn't anything that other people don't experience, but it was definitely heightened. I'm like, this isn't cool if I'm now all of a sudden getting chest pains. I have a friend out in Portland who, when we see each other, we always catch up about stuff. And I was talking to her about like, maybe I should like see a therapist. I never did that in my life. Maybe that's something I should do. She was like, Michelle, like, you were on the edge and you got to go to therapy. You got to do something. And it was so eye-opening to me that this person who knows me, but I don't, again, talk to her every day, pointed that out so clearly. And I was like, fuck, I think you're right. And that was a whole other set of emotions, but I didn't really want to talk about the fact that I was going to start going to therapy. There was a lot of sort of that weird perception issue of, oh, you go to therapy, something wrong with you, you know, which is not the case at all. And so I've been going for the last year, and I didn't really want to talk to anybody about it because I was like, I'm this businesswoman in Philly and my shit's together, and oh, I don't want, like, you know, does that seem like weak, right? And I don't think that at all. I think that if you have the access to have therapy, I think it's very therapeutic. But you know, when I talk to my mom, she's like, huh, therapy, really? I'm like, damn, she's like hard as fuck, man. Like, she went through all this shit in her life and didn't even go to therapy. And then she's like, okay, well, I don't know what it's like to run my own business, so I could see why you might want to go. And I'm like, yeah. And then she's like, well, you know, you didn't really have anybody to talk to when your dad was going through all his alcoholism stuff, because I'm trying to figure out, maybe reconnect some of the things of my upbringing that helped me understand how things have informed me of who I am today, because I wasn't really unpacking that. And she was like, yeah, well, that makes sense, because you didn't really like have anybody to talk to you about it when you were younger. And I'm like, well, thanks, mom, for telling me now. But it was interesting to hear her say that, because that's the first time I've heard her say that. And really, well, two things is, one, I joke with my therapist that she's my business advisor because I pretty much only talk about work stuff. But I also realize that maybe that's a mask and there's deeper stuff I do want to share. But I'm like, I don't want to share that with you or anybody. I can figure it out. So that's some vulnerability I'm trying to muster up the courage to actually just talk through and see what comes of it. And I'll also say that a colleague of mine in Philly, who I just adore so much, is very open about her mental care of herself. And since then, I talked to her about it and I'm thankful that she started sharing that, because then it actually gave me the courage to do it too. So that's why I'm more open about it and enjoy it as a conversation point too, just to kind of get to know where somebody else is at. If they're also going, they feel like they need to go, there's stuff they want to talk about with somebody else. So those are some of the other things that I'm thinking about.
I'd like our listeners to know more about one of our sponsors, Mallory Audio. Let me give Mauricio Escamilla a quick call. That way we can hear from the human behind the company.
Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Mauricio. So I wanted our listeners to get to know you and your company a bit better. What core value of Mallory Audio personally means a lot to you?
Mallory Audio is the culmination of my love for music, sound, and expressive production. Drawn to music and sound at a young age, I decided to focus on the science of it all, how to capture and truly make sound as emotive and powerful as it needs to be in order to fully move and impact the viewer and listener. A core value would be working with those whose voice needs to be amplified. I've had the pleasure of working with many independent artists, producers, and filmmakers to make their production as strong as it can be. Amplifying the voice of the voiceless, specifically marginalized people, is a big part of my work, and it brings me joy and fulfillment as a person of color from immigrant parents to be able to do that.
Mental health is a muscle, is a heart, is an organ that needs taking care of and needs its own form of exercise. What about therapy made you realize this isn't something I need to be afraid of or feel consciously embarrassed of? In fact, this is something I want to embrace because this is what it actually means to me now.
I mean, part of me wants to say I'm still trying to figure that out a little bit. And there's a little bit of like, okay, when I go afterwards, I feel better. So at least I know that. I think the other thing is just the actual discipline of putting something on my calendar that's for me and keeping it there. That's a big issue with me, is that I don't make that time or take those self-commitments seriously. So even just the act of saying, this is an important meeting and I'm going to protect the time that this is on my calendar and not move it unless I absolutely have to, has been even just a good practice for me to realize this is what it means to have something for yourself. You have to sit in this chair because you're choosing to and talk to this person, and you can't know shit about them because that's not how it works, and it feels a little weird, but you just got to do it. So I think that some of those initial things have been good. And I mean, part of it, quite frankly, is being able to talk it out to a professional. And when you're hearing yourself process that stuff, I'm like, oh shit, this is stuff I don't say out loud. And that space is just really nice. And I realize that it's this longer road. I went in thinking, okay, so I'm just gonna like tell my therapist about my life from when I can remember and all these things. And then she's going to be able to like call out some observations. And she was kind of like, that's not what we're doing. And I think just when I last saw her, my dad had open heart surgery, and I walked in, you know, talked to her, and I was like, hey, so my dad got open heart surgery. And so that happened. And that's what happened after I left you. I realized like, that's what went down. She's like, how do you really feel about it? And I'm like, what? And she's like, you just came in here and told me your dad had open heart surgery. Like, you were telling me about a family barbecue. I was like, shit, she like called me out, and that's good. But there's some type of line that I'm trying to connect between that type of response and that feedback I got and this like optimistic kind of lens I put on myself and how I look at things, that I'm like, am I really true to how I feel or what I think about things? And I think that's what I'm realizing, is that the answer is no. I feel really excited about unpacking some of this stuff and figuring out things. I think it's all going to be good. I think there's going to be shit that is like so deeply buried and that I'm going to be like, I don't want to touch that. But that's not helpful to what I'm trying to do. So I have to figure out ways to do that. But also, I'm sick of what feels like a hamster wheel. I keep feeling the same way. Like something's got to give. Like I got to change something, right? So this is me trying to do that. And again, I think that there is a certain courage I'm trying to like build up or like pinpoint so that I'm not as nervous or scared to be more open and out there about it and not just say like, oh, if the opportunity presents itself, I'll talk about it. Like, should I be doing more?
You are one of the most disciplined, focused people with so much perseverance in driving this company. And yet I've always known you as a person with so many different facets. You are musically inclined. You have an incredible community of friends outside of your work. Like music is a huge part of your life. Punk is a big part of your life. In fact, I think you also DJ sometimes as well,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So was music and art just something to help your mind take a break from your work? Or do you also think it's something that you were just subconsciously using to heal from some things that you are unpacking right now?
I think it's probably the mental break, maybe from work a little bit. It's interesting. My dad loves music, and growing up, I would go through his records, and the first bass I played was his bass. You know, he gave it to me. He gave me his amp. So I think music is just that break I get, that mental break and release, especially when I go see live music. It's the time I feel like my mind is doing some of its clearest thinking. And it's kind of interesting. That's very therapeutic for me. When I'm at a good show, listening to a good band, my head goes to a place where I can just do some clearer thinking and new ideas come to me. And then I realized too that I am a big believer of agency and voice, and I love karaoke. You know, when people say like, I'll never do karaoke. I can't sing in front of everybody. I feel like there's something about voice and how people should know that they have a voice and they should feel like they have the authority to use it. And I feel like in some weird way, I correlate that with karaoke a little bit. That's a moment where you can just let it all out, let it go. And there's something in that practice that I feel like has really sent me on some like funny, silly journey of I want to use my voice and this is how I want to use it. And music's really important to me. And eventually I'm going to get older and I don't want to be that sad old person singing karaoke because they love it so much. So I better like create my own music so I can like just do that. But I feel like the thing that you'd mentioned about, you know, listening to music and it being a place to clear my head, that the ultimate way that I can do that is if I play music and sing and make my own music. And that's something that's missing from my life because I'm not doing it enough. And I know it will be something that I need to spend more time on.
Talking with Michelle, I noticed certain thoughts and emotions in her that also come up across a lot of other founders. We often see workaholics ignore personal stuff, which sometimes leads to physical manifestations like claustrophobia and chest pains. This got me curious about the psychology and science behind that. So I called up our friend and visiting expert, Dr. Shira Foy, a doctor of science specializing in entrepreneurship and technology commercialization, with her thesis motivated by the observation that the products and services we use shape our behavior, our habits, the way we interact with one another. You can find more information about her at shirafoy.com. That's shirahfoy.com. Dr. Foy's overall research focuses on entrepreneurial identity across social cultural contexts. So she can definitely drop some knowledge on us.
Hello?
Hey, Dr. Foy. I got a question for you. People, especially entrepreneurs, will bury themselves in work, whether intentionally and unintentionally, and brush off personal things going on in our lives, sometimes to a point where we devalue and dismiss some really emotional stuff. What exactly is going on here, and why is it so hard for people to get to the point of stopping and saying, okay, maybe I actually need to pause and unpack some stuff?
Great question, Jeff. So researchers have found that entrepreneurs are driven to create three types of value. Value for the self in terms of status, reputation, and money. Value for communities in terms of relationships, products, and services for the community, partnerships, and then value for society at large, whether it be social, ecological, or measured in, for example, the number of jobs created. Founders really get a high out of seeing those types of value created. And wading through or dwelling on personal junk and traumatic or troubling situations and relationships doesn't really produce the same kick. And it often doesn't seem to even get us closer to our value creation goals that do give us that high. So it's often not until we find ourselves paralyzed, and I mean literally unable to function, unable to do the work to keep our ventures operating and growing, that we pause and we look around inside ourselves to find out where the blockage is. So in our ventures and projects, we see the runway. You know, we're creating the runway. We develop vision. We lay out a roadmap to get there. It's not always the case with the inner healing process. We don't necessarily see the value of investing the time and walking through the pain of facing the emotional stuff that's piled up. But instead of brushing aside personal things, we can ask, what would working through this allow me to do? If I didn't have to struggle with the, you know, whether it be self-loathing, guilt, shame, disappointment, whatever it might be, what mental and emotional resources would that free up for me to devote to other things? In this sense, something that can really help entrepreneurs is to look at ourselves more holistically. We are not just brains and bodies doing cognitive and physical operations. There's a whole structure of spirit and emotions that support our venturing. It might operate in the background much of the time, but it's absolutely vital. And it's also a lesson I learned personally. So around late 2016, I noticed my ability to do creative work was being taxed. It was really hard to focus. I was restless. And then 2018, 2 years later, it came screeching to a halt. At that point, I got into counseling and immediately realized that for 12 years, I had been sweeping things under the rug. And now, looking over my shoulder, I had a tiny rug, you know, boho tassels and all, sitting upon a mountain of dirt. I spent a difficult summer sifting through that with the help of a counselor. And then by October, I had reached levels of freedom, energy, creative space in my brain that I honestly hadn't experienced in years. So my takeaway was to not let these things pile up, as hard as that can be to avoid. We see that our overall well-being is a critical enabler for our venturing and the other activities that we love to do. So I think if we can find the practices that help us process and be intentional about working them into our schedules, 15 to 20 minutes daily is wonderful. An hour or two on the weekend is great. For example, going on a walk with no podcast, no other input, just thinking over anything that you've been avoiding. And usually you know what it is, right? You will see the impact ripple across the other aspects of your life. For example, research from Dr. Yuval Engel and colleagues shows that entrepreneurs who practice loving kindness meditation, this has a positive effect on their self-compassion, on compassion towards others, and this is actually manifested in their venturing through higher sustainable decision-making and a lower fear reactivity when they are faced with threats and obstacles, both for themselves and their venture. So it's really worth it to get into the habit of unpacking our personal, emotional lives on a regular basis.
I hope our conversation helped listeners reconnect with personal stuff they care about. We end each episode with this question. Ultimately, what's the point of all of this?
Well, I think that nobody fucking knows what's going on. I have this sort of half-joking saying that I said that everybody's wrong, including me. Everybody's wrong, and we're all just doing what we can to make shit up and to do what we can with what we think we know or what we do know, just because there are infinite complexities and unknowns in the world, and we're a blip on the timeline.
Find the complete experience for this episode at talkhumantome.com. And while you're there, take a look at our curated bite-sized clips. We put together these miniature thoughts to help you reconnect in 3 minutes or less. We work with sponsors that care about helping people reconnect and rediscover who they are beyond their work. Check out the special treats they're giving our audience at talkhumantome.com/sponsors. Also, this show takes a dedicated squad. Shoutouts to designer Lala O'Penny for our show's artwork, and to audio engineer Mauricio Escamilla for shaping our sound. Check out their companies and creations at talkhumantome.com/squad. Reach out to them if you need help with any design or sound project of your own. And finally, infinite love to our advisors, mentors, friends, and family. You help us stay inspired and keep this work going. Be well, be curious, practice empathy, and stay human.